Hi, welcome to our podcast on increasing attorney productivity through third-party apps. I'm Gwen McAlpin, the Director of Knowledge Management Services at Perkins Coie. And with me on the panel today are Vern Cole, Security Architect at Perkins Coie, Amy Halverson, Litigation Knowledge Management Manager at Wilson Sonsini Goodrich & Rosati, and Karen Heldy, Director of Library Records and Research Services at Lane Powell. This podcast is part of ILSA's Mobility Month programming, although slightly late. So our topic today is how to respond to the attorney demand for mobility. Our attorneys, like us, are tethered to their mobile devices, and they have an increasing need to be productive and stay connected on the go. We're finding that attorneys are turning to us to find out, to help them leverage their phones and tablets, to find out what apps to use, how to use them more responsibly. And for us, this is raising some issues around how we can help the attorneys with their productivity needs, as well as help them use the app, their mobile devices responsibly, how to support the all of the different apps and devices given the changing nature of them and the different platforms like iOS, Android, and Windows. So we'll talk more specifically about third-party apps that our panel recommends in a minute, but first let's talk about some of the general issues around third-party apps. I should note that all of us come from large firms, so we're approaching this topic from that perspective. Vern, do you want to start us off with a brief overview of mobile device management? I think a common understanding is going to give us a good foundation for our discussion.
Sure. Thanks, Gwen. So mobile device management really came about as a result of the consumerization of mobile devices. Way back in historic years of computing when mobile devices were really the BlackBerries, and that was it. It was easy. BlackBerry had a good management system. Nowadays, that's splintered, and we have Android, we have iOS, we have Windows, we still have a little bit of BlackBerry. But people want to bring those devices into the firm's environment, have access to firm data, email, and some of our more sensitive information. So how do we manage those devices? That's been the growth of mobile device management. That area that of infrastructure has really splintered a lot in the past couple of years. Now everybody can do mobile device management, but what that means gets really sketchy. Some can do what's called Active Sync, which is the email connectivity. Others can do more of management of the application data on the device, which is really where I think law firms should be looking to get to, is managing the device, at least the firm side of the device, not really having to touch the personal side, but be able to handle the firm data on the device, including applications.
How do you decide what the firm data is?
That's a good question, because contacts start to mingle. So your contacts on your phone, are they firm contacts? You probably have personal contacts. Everybody uses their phone as a personal device as well as a firm device. So it gets tough if you can split it out so you have firm email separate from personal email. That makes it easier. And then there are some clear things like you're accessing your document management system. That's clearly firm data.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to keep that separate from your personal data, whatever files you have on there.
Yeah.
You separate your calendars. It gets a little challenging, so that's where the mobile device management software can help.
Mm-hmm. And using the mobile device management or the MDM myself, I know this is also a way that you can push out specific apps that the firm
Yes. That's fairly new, though. That's something that's come about in the last year as these mobile device management systems become more capable and firms start to take more of an interest in developing their own applications. Now we have to be able to push those apps out, get them to the attorneys for internal use. Some of those apps are even available on public app stores, Play Store, whatever they're using. So controlling those apps, getting them out, getting them configured so it's easy for the attorney to start to use, and then, again, controlling the data
mm-hmm.
that comes out with those apps.
Mm-hmm. Amy and Karen, do your firms use MDM, and do you use it to push out apps?
This is Amy. Yes, we use VM AirWatch, and we do use it to push out apps, but that wasn't necessarily the first reason that we installed it. Overall, our use of VM AirWatch is light, meaning the scope of the use, its potential use could be far greater than what we do in terms of, you know, some do geolocation and the like. But our initial use was driven by two primary drivers, one, to be able to wipe a device if it's lost or stolen, as Vern was mentioning, and two, to enable double authentication via the device by installing RSA security for VPN and SafeNet for double authentication web email. We also now, though, push out select WSGR-endorsed applications. And what we've created, what our good technical training and IS department has created, is something called a WSGR catalog. And this is an icon that appears on a person's device. And when you click through it, you can see a variety of apps that are definitely firm and work legal related and firm endorsed. And then they can elect to install those apps if they like.
That's great.
And this is Karen. We use a product called Mass 360. And like Amy, we're using it primarily to enable a remote wipe of a lost or stolen device. And also we use it to establish a profile on the device that includes security features like a 5-minute lockout, you know, when the device isn't being used, to require the 5-character password, things like that. We have the capability to push out firm sanctioned apps, but so far haven't used that much.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of other examples of mobile device management systems. We use MobileIron at Perkins. Microsoft has one they call Intune that is particularly good at managing Windows devices, of course. It also has some capabilities with the other Android and iOS devices. And Mass 360 is one that's pretty up and coming. That one's kind of cutting edge. They're doing some pretty interesting things as well. Citrix has one, and then there's a whole myriad of other people it's a Me Too offering with them.
Mm-hmm.
But those are some of the market leaders right now.
Mm-hmm. And Amy, one thing I know we had talked about is that with this, you know, this ability to push out apps through the MDM, this kind of leads to two different categories of apps. You want to tell us a little more what you were thinking there?
Sure. When we rolled out this WSGR catalog, our technical training staff went out into the field, if you will, and marketed them, and they called it something that the WSGR traveling briefcase, so they could educate people as to how to best use the apps and help them hands-on install the apps and so on. And in the course of doing this, of course, they saw all of the other apps that lawyers had already installed on their phone from the various marketplaces. And, you know, they're all over the map, various editing tools, task trackers, and that sort of thing. And in doing so, I mean, it's clear that our attorneys are using this to increase their productivity. So we do everything we can to support those apps. Which means that our help desk is getting a lot more calls and having to be a lot more versatile and fixing things on the fly, if you will. But mm-hmm. It's just one example of how, as Vern mentioned, with using the phone, of course you use it for personal things as well as work things. And that's definitely happening in terms of these productivity tools as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely we're seeing these, you know, these kind of firm, condoned, firm-supported apps, and then people are obviously going out and finding tons of apps on their own that, you know, maybe they're using even more than those firm-supported ones. I think we're used to this traditional software distribution model of the firm goes through and vets the appropriate mm-hmm. software. We work with a vendor, we get it, we push it out, we do all the training and support, and everybody uses the one software that the firm has decided to use. But with apps, I think what we're finding is just this completely different distribution model where there is no one app that is the right solution that people are using, or that people are finding the apps to use, not necessarily through the firm, but they're finding them on their own. So, you know, Karen, how do you see that mobile devices are really challenging our traditional notion of a software distribution model?
I think this is one of the things that really interests me, in a way, about apps. I mean, because I think it just, the nature of vetting apps, of distributing apps, the adoption of apps, training on apps, it's just all different compared to software. And I think it throws those of us who have been supporting technology in law firms kind of for a loop. I mean, I think our skill sets have developed around the software model, and this is so different in so many ways that it's why there's so much conversation and so much need for information sharing, because I think it's throwing us a loop. And I mean, you can't expect to offer an app recommendation for every use case a lawyer is going to come to you with. You can't expect to offer training and support on any possible app out there. It just feels really different from, you know, we use this version of Windows and that's what we support. But on the plus side, you know, the barriers to entry with apps are really generally very low. I mean, certainly the cost of the product is usually low. Installation is relatively straightforward. The learning curve is usually pretty brief for people. And actually, the cost of failure is usually pretty low. I mean, I'm sure things have happened with apps that have been really bad news, but, you know, it's not like you purchase hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of software and no one can learn it or no one uses it. You know, so the barriers to entry, I think, are kind of offer a little bit of plus side to some of the negatives we see. Also, one thing I think is really interesting, I mean, my IT director mentioned this to me the other day when we were chatting about this, that, you know, lawyers won't come to training, but the same lawyers who won't come to training will spend hours, like, researching apps or configuring their device. I mean, it's somehow the model taps more into the attorney brain, I think, than does the sort of software model that we've been using for so long. So a lot of it feels more attorney-driven rather than sort of attorney-inflicted. It's they're driving it, which, you know, it's kind of fun. I think the best we can do in a lot of ways is expose people to the possibilities and to really publicize the successful use cases that we see out there to show other attorneys what their colleagues have been able to accomplish or achieve or just have fun with, you know, using their mobile devices and using apps.
Right.
We've seen, so we're moving from an old MDM to a new MDM, and as we are making that transition, we took a catalog of the apps that were running on individuals' devices, and we're really looking to see what apps we could recommend, like Karen was mentioning, to the attorneys as we moved into this new space and maybe be able to control those a little bit better. And what we found was there is no common tool other than, well, we have RSA. That's common because everybody needs that.
And that's to remote into our system.
Right.
To get the code to do that.
The two-factor authentication, yeah. Everybody uses that. Past that, they like Facebook a lot. they like Angry Birds a lot. And then it's all over the map in terms of editing software, task management software. It's really because there are so many options available in the app stores. They do a search, they find one, they try it. Like you're saying, Karen, it's only a couple of bucks. It's not $40 for a piece of software. So it's much easier for them to, I didn't like that one. I'll try a different one. Mm-hmm. Or they come and go so quick sometimes that it's just, the developer's not supporting it anymore, so I really can't use it anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting change. And I think the attorneys, one thing that we're dealing with, the attorneys expect the apps just to work. Mm-hmm. And when you're dealing with an app that needs to reach into our environment to get the data that they need for it to work, it doesn't work right out of the box. So you have to, there's some configuration there that has to take place.
If there's configuration or you need a password, you need to connect somehow to the firm's subscription or license or whatever it is.
And it needs to know where to go to get the data once it's inside.
Yeah.
So
getting
that pushed out, if the attorney is going out and finding this app on his own and trying to make it work, there's a level of frustration there that sometimes pops up, like, well, why doesn't this just work? Mm-hmm. It should just work.
Mm-hmm.
And that stems from the original consumer side involvement, this where it went out to a cloud app, it went to Google Docs, or it went to OneDrive, and they were able to make it work that way pretty easily. So the same here.
I think that consumer perspective of a mobile device is really interesting. Amy, what are your thoughts on the app distribution model or how we're looking at apps a little differently than we might software?
Well, it seems like it's turned the distribution model really on its head. And to Karen's point, it's also turned the learning curve over. I think people, what I'm seeing and what I have experienced myself is that you download this app, you start using it for personal things. Maybe it was one project or you just want to test it out. And then if you like it, if it's effective, then you start thinking, oh, hey, I could use this for work. And then you develop these new use cases for it. So instead of being assigned something to use for work only, you're starting at the personal level and then expanding out based on your experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts to really blur those lines of what's personal versus what's firm, and you're starting to commingle data. It gets interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll just throw out, I saw a stat recently that the App Store in July 2010 had 200,000 apps for sale. And 4 years later, in July 2014, that number increased to 1.2 million. So given that huge increase,
explosion. Yeah.
Explosion in just 4 years, I think this is what's at the root of the concern among a lot of law firms of how do you train and support 1.2 million apps.
And that's just one app store, right?
And that's just the app store.
That's just iOS.
That's just iOS.
Apple.
Exactly.
Apple.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. So, you know, so many apps, it's just going to keep growing. How do we train and support on that? Karen, I know you did a lot of work with your firm when you did an iPad rollout there. What's been your experience with training and support?
Right. We did an iPad deployment several years ago. I mean, it was kind of early in the appearance of iPads. So a lot of the whole idea of apps, I think, was fairly new to a lot of people. What I did was I started to put together a weekly email newsletter of iPad tips, and it ranged from recommendations for certain apps to, you know, just tips for effectively using your email or effectively using the calendar. It went over really well. I mean, I think the people who were kind of ready to embrace the technology really appreciated just getting some jumping off points from it. And I really approached it as more an exercise in exposure and sort of building up comfort level and building up interest with people than trying to, you know, make sure everyone uses a particular app or make sure everyone is accomplishing things a certain way. I think apps are so individual, and people, you know, if there's going to be 12 apps to accomplish essentially the same thing, you're going to find 12 people are going to say each one of those is the best and the only one they would ever use. So I think the tips really helped get people to sort of try things, and I think some of the kind of, you know, guides for improving your experience on email, for example, things people didn't realize about not being able to delete an email, you know, by wiping it to the side. I mean, things like that, just making their whole overall experience better made it more of a tool to them. I saw very few requests for training and support as a follow-up on those tips. I mean, I got requests for suggestions for apps for a particular usage, or you know, what kind of stylus should I buy, that kind of thing, or you know, I'm looking for an external keyboard, and I tried to turn those things into next week's typically. But you know, I think people either sort of figured out how to use the app, or they gave up on the app, or they they moved on to something else, and it ceased to be a problem. There was very little follow up support.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Amy, what are you guys doing at Wilson?
Well, as I mentioned, our technical training group did a big rollout when we first installed the catalog, and so that involved, you know, posters and emails and tips, and then just walking the floor and going into offices and helping people. But to Karen's point, I think it is a very individual thing. We do now have we have someone dedicated to our members, our partners here, to meet with them periodically and help assess their workstations, any devices they have, and to work with them on a one-on-one basis then as to how they're using their apps and maybe suggesting things that could work or finding out what their preferences are and bringing that back to our IS department to find out how we can support it better. But the range of use and training, it varies wildly just based on the individual, the personality and their level of technical expertise or interest.
Mm-hmm. We're really just getting started promoting internal apps. We've got one that we've developed with our development team here at Perkins, and we're pushing that out now with the Mobile Iron deployment that we're doing. It's gotten some pretty good reviews, which is nice, and it's actually drawing more people to moving to the new MDM platform, which is very nice from my perspective. Our sales pitch has been more to use that as an attracting force than saying, well, if it's a security thing, you have to do it, which mm-hmm. never goes over real well. That's
It's more about what you can have rather than
right,
what you can't
right.
have.
It's a carrot instead of a stick.
Right.
All right. So that's always nice. And then the apps, I think the apps being personal. With Perkins, we will let you bring anything. And I'm not sure if that's true of the other firms here.
Yeah,
so you have the
yeah.
same problem, right? You can find an app for an iOS, but iOS device doesn't necessarily mean it's going to exist for an Android or
mm-hmm.
Microsoft. Windows. Thank you.
Yeah.
So trying to find one app that will work across all those platforms is really challenging.
Yeah, that's a good point, that it's so different between different platforms. The other thing I find about training and support is we do, I think you've all kind of touched on this, but while we think that we need to create a robust training and support program, I think of my own usage of a mobile phone, and I don't think I've ever been trained on an app or requested support on an app. I think they're just designed to be more intuitive. So as you mentioned, Vern, sometimes the issue is how do I hook this into my firm system
mm-hmm.
rather than how do I navigate
around,
through this,
yeah.
click around, yep, yeah.
Yep.
Because they also have, they tend to be very single purpose as well. So it's not, you know, yeah. it's not too complicated what you're trying to do with an app.
And they're not as, feature-rich probably isn't the right description. I'm sure a lot of the developers would say, well, this is a very feature-rich app. But when you look at even Word on an iPad versus Word on your laptop or your desktop, they're very different in terms of the
mm-hmm.
robustness of the feature set.
Yeah.
So it may be that you don't have the same level of training required just because it's not as complex of an app.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like we don't have a silver bullet here in how we select, train,
mm-hmm.
or support mobile apps, but maybe the way is to recommend apps to attorneys or push them out through an MDM to help them cut through the noise and find things that might be useful to help them be more productive. So let's talk about some of those apps. How about accessing work product and file sharing? That seems to be a common use case that we're being asked about. Amy, what do you do?
Well, our WSDR catalog does include what's called worksite mobility, which is what interfaces with iManage file site, and everyone has that. And then the firm also uses Box, allows attorneys to use Box as a backup system, and so that is also in our firm condoned apps. I mean, the reality is, though, that our attorneys are going to collaborate with our clients wherever our clients want to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some instances, that's going to be other platforms. It might be Dropbox. It might be Google Drive. So people are using those as well when the client wants it.
Mm-hmm.
We're also a Box shop, interestingly enough, and have a similar challenge with some of our clients are the owners of some of these apps, like Google. So it's kind of hard to tell the attorney team for Google that you can't use OneDrive. That's probably not hard, but you can't use Google Drive. That's probably a little
right.
more difficult. Box is we've worked with Box pretty closely to help get some additional tools in there to make things a little bit easier to monitor. Some of the other apps we're steering people towards are not quite as robust as the Box app is, so we're trying to find the right fit there and find that the silver bullet that we're trying to find here on this call
mm-hmm.
which we haven't come across
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, right, the silver bullet.
Yeah.
This is Karen. We use Files Anywhere as our firm sanctioned cloud solution, and there is, it does have an app, but to be honest, I think the usage is more just on sort of mobility, you know, between your office and your home computer and your, you know, your laptop. I think it's not used extensively, actually, with, you know, within a mobile device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the allowing that to transfer between your work computer and your home computer is an interesting data leakage issue that we're trying to keep reins on. But when the client wants to talk about other solutions, you got to go where the client wants to go.
Right. And I think this does sort of highlight that a lot of people are using these cloud apps to basically share with themselves. They're sharing with others, but some of it is just, this is an easy way to make my work portable, so I can pull stuff up on an iPad, because I would rather travel with an iPad than a laptop.
Right. A 2-pound iPad instead of a 5-pound laptop.
Yeah, exactly. The next most popular business case seems to be after just I want to access work product, how can I get that, is then how can I edit it? How can I edit and annotate it? So what are you seeing that people are using for editing on mobile devices?
I think a lot of it is just taking place within an email, to be honest. I mean, someone is, you know, email someone a document, they open it up, and they respond in the text of the email, which is less editing than just, I don't know what you would call it. But, I think for doing hardcore drafting or editing, it's not happening on a mobile device. People are still using their laptops, VPNing in, using that. Even with an external keyboard on an iPad, it's not fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that lack of a pointing device seems to be a pretty big deterrent.
That gets hard.
Yeah.
Even with the Surface, some of the tools that are available on the Surface, and whether or not that's a mobile device is a whole different question, but it's certainly not an iPad, and the iPad not having the mouse and having to try and use a touch, which really a lot of these applications, the editing applications, aren't touch-enabled yet. Mm-hmm. They don't really work very
good
well
point.
Together.
Yeah, Amy, what are you seeing?
Well, we definitely do have attorneys who are editing on their tablets. And we see a whole variety of editors. I mean, we let people work with what they're most comfortable with. The things that we see more often than others are like Docs2Go, Pages, and QuickOffice when you're dealing with Word. And then if you're doing markups, Notes HD or iAnnotate are a couple that come to mind. One thing that we have found, though, is that we're trying to make our Word templates more streamlined. I mean, historically, you created your document processing department would create a template for a letter or a pleading or what have you with the expectation that it's only going to be edited in Word, and that's not the case anymore. So we're going back and cleaning out some of those templates to make them more easily editable cross-platform.
Interesting.
Now that's an interesting nut to crack. We have the same challenge here. We use MacPack and a host of other plugins with Word that add formatting or something to the document. So when you open the document in something like Documents2Go, it can be hit or miss whether or not it adjusts the format for you. And that can hurt you if you're trying to submit something to a court or something like that. So it's been interesting to hear some of the complaints.
Yeah, and that is a common theme I've heard with editing apps, is that the preserving formatting is not always consistent across them, so that the editing that people can expect to do through a mobile app is going to be much lighter editing or something in the manner of commenting or drafting, but you're probably not going to finalize your court filing and e-file it from your phone. What about note-taking? Amy and Karen, I know you're both big fans of Evernote. You want to tell us how you use that?
Sure. I use Evernote for just about everything. It's not just notes. It's web clipping. I take photos of things and send them to Evernote, and it machine reads whatever the text is. I keep, you know, just my router ID number on it for personal use. But I definitely use it for work things as well, non-client materials always. But, you know, task lists, clippings of articles that I want to go back and read, keeping tracks of different cases and status of cases. And I know that some attorneys do use it here as well, and some are using it within working groups to collaborate, again, for non-client information, but things like working group lists, so the list of all the parties to a suit and their contact information and their lawyers and so on, their lawyers' contact information, rather. And that has been popular. Now, we haven't incorporated that into the enterprise. But, yeah, Evernote is fantastic, and it's really changed my life.
That's a great recommendation.
Yeah. Karen, has it changed your life?
Yes, I too am an Evernote evangelist. I love it. And I do use it for a blend of personal and business reasons. And, you know, the one thing, in a way, I really like about it is just simple lists. And it sort of reflects the reality that ideas and information come to you in so many different times and places, and I like having one place where if I hear about a book that I'd like to read and I'm on the bus, or I hear about it when I'm sitting in my office talking to someone, or I'm sitting on my couch at home, you know, there's always one place I can go write that down so I don't forget it. So it's just great for that reality of the way information comes at us. I use it to organize projects, for example, for if I'm doing a group presentation. It's a way to sort of pull in things I want to include and collaborate with people on. It's also good for project management on a sort of light scale. I think it works well. I know in terms of attorney usage, again, as you know, they're not using it with client confidential information, but I know of one attorney, for example, who serves on a nonprofit board and uses that to, you know, organize meeting notes and just sort of kind of organizes his work related to that board and seems very happy with that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of our attorneys are using OneNote. I know they use that to collaborate, and we have a space on our SharePoint installation that we're putting some OneNote notebooks. Is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, OneNote notebooks up on SharePoint. And since we're rolling out Mobile Iron, that will allow access to file shares. So we're trying to work out how they can collaborate with those OneNote notebooks on their iPads and still keep them up on SharePoint. So that's been an interesting project to mm-hmm. try and get working. Because they are doing a lot of client work in there.
Mm-hmm.
To keep
but we
track
don't necessarily
of.
Want them to be syncing that client work up to the cloud.
Exactly.
So it's got to go through the MDM. Yeah, and I'm a pretty heavy user of OneNote myself, and I use it all sort of locally because, you know, I just haven't synced it up to the cloud to use it through an app. But there are some instances where I have, and one that was handy for collaboration was at last year's ILTA conference. there was a group of us that had a shared OneNote notebook, and we all had the app on our iPads and our keyboards there, and we all took our notes of the, you know, because there's always 12 sessions
yeah.
at one time you want to go to. We all took our notes in the same OneNote notebook. And that was great. But this is an app that, like when you were talking about the feature set of apps, this is one where I find a huge difference in the features between the desktop version of OneNote and the mobile app version
mm-hmm.
of OneNote. So legal research seems to be another area where there's a lot of apps to choose from. Karen, you're our library representative. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these mobile apps for research?
Sure. I think, you know, they're not really meant for in-depth research. They're not where you would want to do to spend, you know, an hour researching a complicated issue. But, you know, for pulling up a case on the ferry or in the courthouse, they're great. I mean, you've just got so much access right there at your fingertips. An app like Westlaw Next is a very nicely put together app. It's all synchronized with your Westlaw account. So if you're using it on the ferry coming into work and you save some cases to your folder under that matter number, you get to your office, you sign in, you know, that same folder is available to you with the same content. So it transitions nicely from whatever platform you're using to research on. Fastcase is another nice legal research app. There's a free version, which is actually pretty robust. Fastcase is offered for free in some states through their bar association.
Right.
So for people who have a full Fastcase account, they get even more. But honestly, the free one is pretty darn good. If your firm subscribes to Hine Online, they have a They have a mobile app which you can use to read law review articles. It works very nicely. I'd say those are probably kind of the best of breed that I've seen. They're also, if your firm happens to subscribe to electronic books that are published by Thomson Reuters, who are the Westlaw people, they have an app called ProView, which you can use to, it's sort of Kindle for Westlaw. not Westlaw, but West. You can use that for accessing ebooks on a mobile device.
Huh. One other app that our litigators have found valuable or are finding valuable is the Pacer. There's a free app called Docket that gives you a nice interface into Pacer and also lets you actually view and download documents. The same Pacer charges apply, but it's nice to be able to do that wherever you are.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. What about current awareness? This seems like a use case that's really well suited to mobile devices, since there's so many ways to consume information through apps. Amy, how do you use apps for current awareness?
Well, it's changed over time. I'm thinking of how I used to train our first year associates and how I do now. You know, before the iPhone, it was set up an RSS reader on your desktop, and here are a list of the different practice-specific websites that you might consider subscribing to. I always stress that it's very important as first-year associates and junior associates to start really immersing yourself in what's going on in your practice area. You know, subscribe to the blogs, find out what's going on in the Supreme Court, get that list of case releases each day. So now, instead of saying Google Reader, I recommend things like Feedly, which, of course, you can now consume on any device, whether it's desktop, handheld, or your tablet. But the same principle really applies, and that is make sure that you keep up with things, and it's a really fast way to do so. And inevitably, again, this is a place where personal mixes with work. I mean, I'd have all kinds of different buckets of feeds in my Feedly, and I'm sure that other people do too, non-work related and work related.
Mm-hmm. I really like this use case that you've got with Feedly and talking to associates about websites that they should be following or blogs or whatever, you know, especially from a knowledge management perspective. I think in knowledge management, we're always trying to figure out how can you use apps in a more substantive way to work with your attorneys. So I really like this idea of helping them integrate this current awareness that they need to do into, you know, something like Feedly, which, as you say, you may be going to it and kind of hooked on it for personal reasons because, you know, you're keeping up on, like, travel blogs or something. But this allows you to keep up on that, you know, use kind of small chunks of your day to keep current on, you know, the current awareness that you need to do as part of being a lawyer. Karen, do you have any favorite apps for current awareness?
I like Feedly as well. Flipboard is another option, and that's just a very, very elegant app, very visually appealing. And, I mean, to be honest, I use it more for personal interests, but there is plenty of content on there which is work-related, so you can do it more than just look at your daily dose of cute animal pictures. I'm a big Flipboard fan. And also, I mean, a lot of what mobile devices I see an impact on with current awareness is just the fact that you have access to your email. I mean, the library mm-hmm. either produces or subscribes to a number of products that are basically just getting very current, very up-to-date information out to the attorneys. And if they are able to check that on their way into work or when they're waiting in line to get coffee, that just means one less thing they have to do when they sit down at their desk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the availability of the news when you have that down moment. I think we're losing more and more down moments, but because
right.
of these devices, right?
Right,
you don't have downtime anymore. You have your device with you all the time, so you're constantly connected and can get to all that news.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and that's the type of thing that a busy lawyer is not going to sit down and say, I have an hour now that I'm going to spend reading news. You just want to have that stuff come at you when
yep.
Like this morning, I showed up at Starbucks to a very long line. That was a great opportunity to catch up on news. And here we have a firm-wide Wall Street Journal subscription, and we promote that app so people can download that app onto their mobile devices, sign in with into our firm subscription, and then get that on their phones and tablets. And we've gotten really good reception to that. It's a it's a pretty easy app to use, and they like having that that quality news source.
Yeah, we have that as well, and that was very well received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's interesting is that some apps like LinkedIn and I guess Facebook, by subscribing to groups and following those, that's an information flow in and of itself. So that's another way that our current awareness is built into an app.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And on LinkedIn in particular, I actually find their app to be easier to use and more intuitive than the desktop version, which is a little too cluttered.
That's true too, yeah.
It's very easy to see what people are posting, what's going on, all of that through the app.
They have less real estate to throw at you on the phone than they do on the desktop,
right.
So it's a little bit cleaner.
Yeah. What about practice-specific apps? Are you finding that any of your practice groups, like litigation or transactional or regulatory, are finding applications that they are specifically using that maybe other groups aren't, or they're adopting apps at a different rate?
I expected, in a way, I think litigation-related apps to be more of a factor than they are with us, and I think the reality is that large firms already have a tremendous amount of infrastructure and support around litigation, and they've invested a lot of money, they've invested a lot of training, and people are comfortable with it, and they're not likely to want to walk into a courtroom with just an iPad instead of the the whole huge system they're used to. I think it's potentially of great advantage to solos or small firms who don't have that much support available to them. Mm-hmm. Seems like there would be use cases there where they could have access to something that goes way beyond what they had in the past. But I think for law firms, I just haven't seen a huge adoption, at least at my firm.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of trial pads, as we're calling them, that have a iJuror and the trial pad app.
Mm-hmm.
That are being used, but it hasn't really kicked off like you were saying, Karen. We have, I think, two, and they still take the iPad with them. They also take the laptop that has the software they're used to. They can hand the iPad around in the court a little bit easier than it is to pass the laptop around. But yeah, we're still not seeing huge demand. I think we haven't had any more than the original request for two.
Yeah.
And it's...
Yeah, and what I just am asking around about, trial pad, transcript pad, and iJuror in particular are the ones that seem to be coming up from the trial perspective. And what I heard is that they can be fairly complex to set up, so there's a little bit of a learning curve on that, and you've got to kind of dedicate some time to it. And they may be suited to smaller trials, not, these week-long affairs. The other point is that when you go to trial, you have backups of everything. So you're not going to walk in with, Karen, you were saying this, but, just your iPad and not have, two or three backups of the same thing just in case something crashes or doesn't work the way you expect it. The other thing is that I think that a lot of these apps rely on internet connectivity, and in a courtroom you can't rely on that. You may be in the basement courtroom that day and your connection is spotty, and then your trial doesn't go quite as well. So what other apps are you seeing that may help with staying productive or connected? And here I tend to look at productivity broadly. It's really anything that helps attorneys with the business of law, not just producing a document or somehow managing a client relationship.
We're seeing Cisco Jabber is really popular, and that is that forwards your phone to your desktop phone to your tablet or iPhone, and it really it's taken off to the extent that some people just don't even use their desktop phones at all anymore, and only use Jabber. So and again, that's a personal, a blend of the personal and the work, because through this one phone, you're getting calls from both to both numbers, your personal and your work. But you know, just given given the way we practice now, that's a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of travel-related apps. I mean, TripIt, I think, is one of my must-have apps. It combines all the information related to your travel into one platform. It's very easy to get all that information in there. I think that increases efficiency tremendously. Certainly, you know, simple things like maps.
Mm-hmm.
It makes just getting to, you know, a deposition in an unfamiliar place that much more efficient. You know, transit trackers. I love, you know, being able to check in on my phone for a flight and use my phone for my boarding pass instead of having to print
mm-hmm.
a boarding pass. Things like that can make a huge, huge difference. In addition to travel, I think, you know, there are productivity tools that can really help. And I sometimes use these at my desk. Like, there's an app called 3030 for time management. And it's basically a series of fancy timers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use some sort of time-related time management system, that's always with you. And I use a project management tool called Trello, which
mm-hmm.
I mostly use it on the web, but that has an app as well, and that just gives you that information wherever you are, which can be incredibly handy.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of time, we do have an app for mobile time entry that is becoming more popular. Nobody likes to enter their time, but
enter their time.
You can do it while you're already stuck on a train or something.
Right. No, that's a good one, because that is something that you don't like to do, you've got to do. So, right, if you can get it done in chunks of time rather than taking away from...
In the line at Starbucks.
Yeah, in the line at Starbucks, right. You're cranky already waiting for your coffee.
As the security-focused person here, one that I actually get some questions about this, which is nice, and one that comes up frequently is password apps. Everybody unfortunately have a lot of passwords. I actually looked this morning before this call, and I have 153 passwords in one password.
Wow.
Probably a little bit more than the average person, since I am a little more paranoid than the average person. But attorneys are asking about what I have a lot of passwords I have to manage. How can I manage that? Is there something I can use? And three apps that I will typically recommend. 1Password is one I really like. It has a pretty easy interface to get used to. And all of these apps have an iOS version, an Android version, a desktop version, so you can sync your passwords and keep them, back them up, because you don't want to lose them.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to have a very strong password for the app. Unfortunately, the password app requires a password to get into it. Or some of the iOS apps are now fingerprint enabled,
You
can use your fingerprint to open the app, which is really nice. You still have to have a password, though, because when you restart your phone, you have to enter the password. Can't get away from it. Another one that I've used in the past and then have since moved on is Keeper.
Mm-hmm.
That's got a nice, easy interface to get used to. And then LastPass is another one.
Mm-hmm.
All of these apps will let you sync passwords to the cloud. That's not something I am comfortable doing, again, probably because of my own paranoia, but it's another way to back up your passwords. So you can sync them between devices. If you get a new device, it's easy to transfer onto it. They're all pretty useful apps. They all protect, not all of them, but these three in particular will protect your passwords very well.
Mm-hmm. That's an important one. Amy, what about your on-demand learning app that you told me about?
Yeah, this was popular, particularly just in January, you know, the end of the year, CLE compliance time of year. We have an online university that houses
mm-hmm.
recordings of all of our educational programs, both internal and external for clients. And our clients have access to our corporate counsel series and general counsel series and can actually consume those recordings through their phone as an MP4. And then we also have, there's an app through PLI which we have a firm-wide subscription to, and you can easily download seminars from there and listen to them. So it helps with education, client outreach, and CLE compliance.
That's really nice that you've got that you're providing those CLEs to your clients. That's a great marketing tool.
It's popular, and, you know, it also gives we do client days as well, but, of course, I think I haven't run the numbers, but I think it probably it's more consumed through the site than it is in person.
Yeah, and CLEs, I know you mentioned the PLI one, and I've used that app as well. Not all of their content is downloadable into the app, but some of it is, and so it's nice. They have some very long programs, so it's nice to be able to listen to those while on the go. And I'll just throw out Westlaw has their West Legal Ed Center has an app, CLE Mobile, which I think there's a lot more content available on that through the app, and that makes it very easy to download your programs and just get CLE credits while you're on the treadmill.
Wish we did that. That would be nice.
Yeah. One other thing that I've found is pretty useful from an attorney perspective on the app, so just, you know, from the contacting and networking or contacts and networking perspective, we've already talked about LinkedIn. We have developed an internal contacts app, so it pulls in all of the contact information for all attorneys and staff at the firm, office information, 24/7 help information, and that's an app that we're pushing out through our MDM. And, you know, as Vern was talking about the carrot versus the stick on our MDM rollout, that's definitely one of the carrots. And then another one is Yammer. If your company uses Yammer, it's got a pretty easy-to-use interface through the app, and you can just kind of keep up on your business social networking through your phone.
One of the more popular apps at our WSGR catalog is the scanner. We have, you know, so you can just take a picture of a document, and it automatically turns it into a PDF, or there's one that's a card can, and that will, or cam card is what it's called, and it lets you, it shows you how to line up a business card in your phone and take a picture of it and then actually logs it for you, all the information, and you can sync that with Outlook.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and then, you know, one other I'll throw out there is we use Chrome River for expense reimbursements, and that's got an app where you could create your expense reports, but I think the best part of it is that you can take pictures of your receipts and upload them into Chrome River and then complete your expense reimbursement from there.
That's nice.
Yeah. Any other must-have apps or ideas for increasing attorney productivity on their devices?
None that come to mind.
All right. Well, I hope this podcast gave everyone some ideas on how to help the attorneys at your firm use their mobile devices for more productivity. We've given you some ideas on some apps and some things to think about in terms of training, support, how to vet those apps. Look out for a blog post on the ILTA KM blog with highlights from this podcast, and we'll include links to sources that may give you some other food for thought. So many thanks to my terrific panel. You guys have had some great insights and ideas on mobility from an attorney perspective. I appreciate you joining me today and sharing your thoughts with the ILTA community. Thank you.